thanks for listening to another episode of Project Zion. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ.
Hi, and welcome back to the Project Zion podcast. I'm Carla Long, your host, and today I'm interviewing Art Smith, whom you might know best from his Facebook posts. Just kidding, Art. Actually, you might know him as an apostle with Community of Christ and as a minister who has worked all over this church. I'm not even kidding. And I can't wait to hear more about that. But for now, Art, welcome to the show. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks, Carla. It's really great to be on Project Zion again.
I know, Art, that you're a fan of Project Zion.
I am a super huge fan of Project Zion.
Well, feel free to fangirl all you want. No problem with me. Or no. So, Art, tell us about yourself. I already mentioned that you're an apostle, but tell us, where you've worked in the church up to now and what you do and where your area is. We just want to hear it all.
Sure. So, I'm from Canada. I grew up in West Quebec. My name is Art. My mother is really happy when people call me Arthur, so you're always welcome to call me Arthur.
Would you prefer I called you Arthur?
No.
Oh, okay.
But my mother would love it.
Oh, okay.
No, it doesn't matter. Most people call me Art, but, as I have roamed around the church in all sorts of different places, I get called all sorts of different things. So I grew up in West Quebec, and people called me Arthur. And when we lived in French Polynesia and Tahiti, people there in French called me Arthur. I spent about 10 years serving the church in Latin America, and it was pretty common to be called Arturo in Spanish-speaking places. And probably my favorite is in Brazil, where they would call me Irmão Archie.
So, wow!
Whatever you want to call me. Archie, Arturo, Arthur, Art, or for my mother, Arthur.
My goodness, that's hilarious. So you just mentioned all those places where you worked. Tell us more about working in those places.
So it's been quite an adventure. So when I first started working full time for the church in 1997, I was assigned to Canada. So I was a children, youth, and young adult minister up there. And then after 3 years, we moved to French Polynesia, and we lived on the island of Tahiti and traveled all around all sorts of islands in French Polynesia, but also to what was the Pacific field for Community of Christ back then. So Hawaii, Fiji, New Caledonia, New Zealand, Australia, amazing places. Mm-hmm. And then about 10 years serving in Latin America. So the Caribbean and Latin America were together at one point. A little bit of Haiti, my first visits to Haiti were back then. And then eventually kind of settled into mostly Central and South America. I was Mission Center president in South America and learned to speak Spanish and Portuguese. It's been an interesting adventure.
It sounds like an amazing adventure. So you've served the church on multiple continents. And so you've learned to speak all of those languages. Did you speak Tahitian or French when you were in French Polynesia?
So the colonial language in Tahiti is French, and mostly I got away with speaking French. I learned a little bit of Tahitian. So if you were to sit next to me in church in one of our congregations in Tahiti, I could probably tell you what the sermon is about, even if it were being preached in Tahitian. But as far as Tahitian conversation, my Tahitian is not very good. It wasn't very good at its best, and now it's really rusty.
Oh.
But I speak French and Spanish and Portuguese and a little bit of English.
Art, that's incredible. Did you grow up speaking French?
So I grew up in a part of Canada where about 90% of the people speak French. So in my neighborhood where I grew up, we were part of an English-speaking minority, but there were French speakers all around. I went to an English school, but we had 2 hours of French in elementary school, starting from kindergarten every day. So I learned to speak French and going into shops and also kind of helping translate for my father when he would be going to renew a driver's license or pay his municipal taxes. All of that was in French. And so I was a little bit of an amateur French English translator from the time I was just a little guy. So I grew up with French and English.
Like, what a blessing to learn a different language when you are young. I mean, I wish that that would have happened, but there's not a lot of non-English speakers in Mound City, Kansas, where I grew up, a town of 600. Really, it's pretty much just English.
Really? You know what, though? I'll bet you there are more. I mean, I know as I, so when I was first in the Council of 12 and was assigned to South Central USA, mm-hmm. and got to travel through Missouri and Kansas, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, all those places, it would amaze me how much in recent years, how much Latin America has moved into the neighborhood. And, oh, it amazed me going into little towns in Southeast Kansas, Northwest Missouri, Arkansas, all these mostly Mexican, but all sorts of Central American immigrants and stuff down in those areas. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. I actually remember my mother telling me the first time she ever tried a taco in her entire life was when I was like 7 or 8 years old, like in the mid 80s. That was the first time she ever had tried a taco. So yeah,
that was probably about the first time I was trying a taco. I remember our pastor, Ken Barrows, he and his wife had moved to Ottawa. They were from he was from Klamath Falls, Oregon, and they were going to invite our family over, and they decided they wanted to have a taco feast, and they set out in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, to find the ingredients for tacos, and they ended up buying like a can of these tortilla shells that you open the can, and then they fried them themselves because you couldn't find like hard taco shells anywhere in Ottawa back at that time in the 1980s.
Isn't that amazing?
And the world has changed since then.
So much. Thank goodness we can find tortillas now. That's like a main staple of my life.
Oh yes. Tortillas. Mm. Thank goodness.
Well, gosh, well, that was a great conversation about tacos.
Really what you wanted to talk about today, was it?
No, it wasn't actually a question I had, but I'm really happy to have had that conversation. So really, what I'm really curious about is you just returned from a trip to Haiti, right?
I did.
Yeah, and the church I know has been pretty strong in Haiti for a while, but also Haiti has had a lot of setbacks with a lot of natural disasters, and I know that that is near and dear to your heart, and I'm really curious about what it's like down there. But before we get into that, I wanted to hear you talk a little bit more about, first of all, the mission initiatives from Community of Christ, and especially the mission initiative of Abolish Poverty and Suffering. So could you talk a little bit about the mission initiatives and what they mean to you, and then move into Abolish Poverty and Suffering?
Yeah, sure. So the mission initiatives are kind of, that's in the council as an apostle for Community of Christ. This is my passion. So this is what we work on together. And, you know, it is tricky to talk about one mission initiative without talking about the rest of them, because in my mind, they all go together. They all work together. So we invite everyone to participate. That is inviting all people to Christ. And we invite everyone. As we invite everyone, we pursue this peace and justice thing. We proclaim peace through radical recognition of the worth of all persons, that everybody is invited, that everybody belongs in this project together, that we unite together in our diversity, and that there's a place at the table for everybody, and not just at the table, but like preparing the table and working together in Christ's mission. So, and we develop disciples to serve because we need to develop ourselves and others so that we can be stronger in this mission. And wherever we get together in groups of people, congregations, mission kind of bubbles up out of all of that. And so, yeah, abolish poverty and suffering is, it's just kind of one of those things that we do together naturally as we come together as people. You know, one of the things that fascinates me about the Abolish Poverty and Suffering Mission Initiative, and I think when we first started talking about it a lot as a church, I mean, it's always been, it was always a part of the church, even when I was growing up, but right. Since we started talking formally and officially about these five mission initiatives, I think when I first started teaching about Abolish Poverty and Suffering, I was kind of imagining that, you know, well, that's the mission initiative that, like, the wealthy rich people in certain countries would do to help the poor people in certain other countries. And it's been really interesting to discover how that mission initiative speaks to everybody in every context. So, you know, I remember being in Callao, Peru, and, you know, you could take some pictures and send them back home and people would be like, oh, look at those poor people. And I'm like, yeah, and look at what they're doing. They're engaged in pulling together, they've got a clothing drive organized because they are working to abolish poverty and end suffering, and they are helping in this, yeah, even poorer neighborhood where they work out in Montesión. And, or, you know, it's the same kind of thing where when Hurricane Matthew hit Haiti back in October of 2016, even before World Church, before we could kind of get our act together to help alleviate the suffering of the people who had been hurt by Hurricane Matthew, the Pétionville congregation in Port-au-Prince, where the hurricane didn't really hit, they were getting together money and clothing and food and organizing a shipment out to the areas of Haiti that were most affected by Hurricane Matthew. So Abolish Poverty and End Suffering is, it's just this powerful call that seems like just speaks to everybody in whatever context you find yourself in. Even if you're poor, you know, there's always, I've never really met yet the congregation of people who would say, oh, we're poor, we're the ones that Abolish Poverty and End Suffering is supposed to benefit. No, everybody seems to be motivated by this powerful call to help our neighbors, to reach out and help others. And so, yeah, it's a wonderful mission initiative, Abolish Poverty and Suffering.
And so empowering. I mean, I just love hearing that. I'm just going to digress just for a second. I remember hearing about the PhDP program from Outreach International, the Participatory Human Development Program. And I remember learning about it. And what it is like, you know, what you're saying, people who live in poverty, having them kind of be empowered to figure out what they need and how they can, you know, get to that point. And I remember hearing a story about this group of people. I don't even know where they were, but Outreach International person went in and to talk to them and said, well, what do you think your community needs? Like, these are people with no clean drinking water. These are people who are very hungry all the time. And they said, you know what we really need? We need to take care of the dog problem that we have here. We have way too many dogs in our village. And the Outreach International person's like, okay, let's figure it out. And they figured it out. They fixed their dog problem. And then they went on to tackle the water issue and the food issue. So, like, empowering people, like, changes all of them. That's how I see it, at least.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, how cool. Well, thanks for saying that. That's cool. So you've already mentioned Haiti and what they have done to help some of their congregations. First of all, how many congregations do we have in Haiti? And how many people is that? Do you know that?
Yeah, so we have, we think, about 175 congregations in Haiti. Our record keeping, it's a little bit of a moving target. And, you know, I remember my first trip to Haiti, visiting and asking some of these basic statistical questions and being told, you know, well, this is how many people we have officially on the books, you know, in our membership database for this congregation. But you know how it is. We always have, you know, this number in the membership database, but we have like twice that many who come out on a typical Sunday.
Wow.
Thinking, oh, actually, where I grew up in the church, usually we have way more on the membership database, but they don't all come out anymore.
That's
so
true.
It's kind of, a little bit opposite in Haiti. So it's a little bit hard to say exactly how many members we have. We've got about 175 congregations. Some of those congregations are really big congregations of like, up in Gonaive, we might have 400 people out on a typical Sunday. And in Pétionville, our big congregation in Pétionville at its height would have been 800 to 1,000 people in that congregation. And then we've got little rural congregations where, we might have 20 or 30 people that gather on a typical Sunday under a little makeshift structure, with a tin roof and some tree trunks holding that tin roof up. So it's really kind of a range. It has also been, it's been an interesting journey and a struggle over the last few years, to be really honest. So we used to talk about having over, and some people may probably remember, we used to talk about having over 300 congregations in Haiti. And over the last few years, we've kind of struggled with a bit of a challenge as we've kind of tried to focus in new ways on being open and authentic about Community of Christ identity and mission. So it used to be that in Haiti, I think we kind of sponsored a lot of congregations that were just kind of generic evangelical Christian churches that maybe would have the Community of Christ sign, but didn't. They didn't really embrace much of what was Community of Christ identity. They wouldn't have, maybe even known about or have heard about Community of Christ priesthood structure or enduring principles or mission initiatives. And so in the last 10 years or so, especially under Apostle Bunda Chibwe's leadership and his team, we've really worked to try to find a good space of being kind of authentically Community of Christ, not forcing things that culturally don't make any sense on the church in Haiti, but trying to kind of really take a good look at what it means to be Community of Christ and finding ways to really make that live in the Haitian culture in wonderful ways. And so it's been really exciting. We've got a staff and pastors right now that are really committed to exploring that. We've also had some congregations say, especially as there have been fewer economic benefits to being part of Community of Christ, as we've been through some fiscal kind of belt tightening. So as there's been kind of less money flowing and a little bit more desire to focus really on who we are in terms of Community of Christ, in terms of our enduring principles and mission, some people have kind of said, I think we're just going to go on our own way. So that's been kind of sad in some ways, but also exciting in some ways. And so right now we say we've got about 175 congregations in Haiti. So,
well, I appreciate you saying those things. I know that has been kind of an issue for us in the past about, saying that this congregation's Community of Christ, and yet they don't even know the IMMB, the identity, mission, message, and beliefs of Community of Christ. And so I think that shows a lot of integrity on the part of Apostle Bunda Chibwe and those ministers and you, of course, even though we may have quote unquote lost some congregations, I think that the benefits of following our integrity definitely outweigh the loss of those congregations. So thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that. You mentioned something about, we don't, do anything that doesn't make sense culturally in Haiti. Can you explain more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, so I mean, I think every place where the church exists, there are, we offer the basic beliefs of the church, the enduring principles of the church, the mission of the church, but different pieces of it kind of resonate in different ways and inspire people in different ways. So you know, in Haiti, like everywhere, you know, people have to kind of take that that basic story, those basic principles, and kind of make them their own. So, you know, that happens. That means that the church just looks a little bit different in urban areas to rural areas, and each country where the church exists, it looks a little bit different. So, that means, I don't know, Carla, let's see. What do you want to know? I think, it just means that there is this kind of wonderful diversity in Community of Christ.
There absolutely is, for sure. Yeah. So maybe a better question for you to be like, what's the regular culture like in Haiti? Like, can you describe like what it's like there, or what is the church culture like in Haiti?
Yeah, so I guess from my perspective, when I think about the church in Haiti, the first thing I think about is this powerful faith. So where I grew up in Community of Christ, you know, we used to actually go to church more often when I was a kid than what they typically do in most places in Canada now. So when I was a kid, we were at church on Sunday mornings and Sunday evenings and Wednesday evenings. Nowadays, it tends to be mostly, you know, a Sunday morning kind of thing, maybe Wednesday nights in some places. But in Haiti, in so many of our congregations, they've got something going on at church pretty much every day of the week. So Sunday morning would be maybe prime time, but Sunday night people would be back for worship. They'd have an evening where they're having a prayer service. They'd have a women's group that meets on another day, a men's group that might meet, a youth group that meets. They've got something going on all the time. And the church is just so much the center of their lives in a lot of cases. I first started to appreciate this a little bit in the days after the earthquake back in 2010. And I remember this major earthquake that struck Port-au-Prince. And I had already formed relationships with people in Haiti at World Conference, and because they were part of my field, and I'd traveled there and been involved in leadership training events and things with the leaders and staff. And so when I started hearing on the news about this horrible earthquake, I was really just really scared and worried for people that I knew. And I remember I was in Nicaragua on a trip for the church, and I remember spending kind of 24 hours mostly just hitting redial on Skype, trying to connect with anyone in Haiti. And I remember that first phone call connecting with Faustin, Brother Faustin, who was one of our national leaders. He's the Mission Center financial officer now for the Great South Mission Center in Haiti. But at that time, he was serving as the church staff person in Cité Soleil, which is kind of a world renowned, difficult, poor neighborhood in urban Port-au-Prince area. And, you know, connecting with Faustin, so just in like the 24 hours after the earthquake, and finding him in one of our churches in Cité Soleil, and he holds up the phone and people are there singing. And
oh, wow.
I'm like, I'm hearing all these stories about, you know, all these people that have died and all of the horrible devastation and destruction and everything. And 24 hours after it, our congregation, one of our congregations in Cité Soleil, people have gathered together in the church building and they're singing hymns together, you know, and in some ways that just has come to characterize what Community of Christ culture in Haiti is like, and what Haitian culture is like. Faith is very, very important. And yes, singing is very important. So I just got back from Haiti. We had our first ever, Haiti Great North Mission Center Conference.
Wow.
And so Haiti, it used to be just one mission center in Haiti. So 300 some congregations were all part of one mission center. That's now divided into two mission centers. And so they had their first ever Mission Center conference in Ash. And it was a very ecumenical event. So that's another thing about Haiti. There is this amazing ecumenical spirit, cooperation, love between all the different Christian denominations. And so we're at this Mission Center conference, but when Lanier Lefort, the Mission Center president, stands up to welcome people to the Mission Center conference, he's really welcoming probably about two-thirds of the people in the congregation are choirs and people invited from other churches who have come to share in the celebration of our Mission Center conference.
Amazing.
With us. We've got like 1,000 people there, and 700 of them are not Community of Christ. They are, you know, and we actually, we could have filled the building with Community of Christ people, but it's just, that's kind of so much that ecumenical spirit and wanting to come together and celebrate each other's good stuff is very much a part of the Haitian spirit.
So, yeah, talk about blessings of community. My goodness.
Yeah, they could teach us a lot about the blessings of community.
And I really appreciate what you said about the church being the center of a community. I think, way back in the olden days, before there were tacos here in the United States, I feel like the church was the center of the community, but now people are so spread out, that makes it really difficult. And I know that there are people who yearn for those times when they could just be with their church community and feel loved and, you know, feel strengthened by that all the time. So that's a really beautiful thing to think about.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It does end up looking kind of funny sometimes because, you know, so here you're in places. I had people asking me questions on Facebook because I was posting pictures of all these people very well dressed for church on Sunday morning, and many of them even in uniform. So all these choirs that came, every choir was in uniform, and they had their one of our choirs had these red beret hats and red uniforms, and everybody just looked fabulous. And I think some people from the United States kind of trying to make sense of, well, wait a minute. I mean, you're in like this place of abject poverty, and yet they don't, you know, they look kind of well dressed, and how can they afford uniforms for, you know, for their choir at church? And well, you know, church and singing and being in that choir, I mean, these are things that are absolutely central to their life. And so we could maybe question priorities a little bit. You know, did you really need that red beret to look particularly dapper in your choir for church? Wouldn't it have been better to have spent that on, you know, better housing or better food or maybe? But it does help to just kind of understand the absolute central place that being in that choir and share, it's coming together to celebrate faith together, the central place of all that in Haitian culture. It's pretty strong and pretty amazing.
It does speak volumes about their community and how important their community is to them. So I think that's really well put. So you mentioned earlier about the earthquake in 2010, and then more recently, Hurricane Matthew has hit Haiti. And so I know the church has given some money to help Haiti, the Haitian church, rebuild. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how much money did the church give, and what has come out of that in the last couple of years?
Sure. And maybe just to clarify a little bit, Carla, so I've had a lot of people ask me about, it kind of seems like, oh man, poor Haiti, you know, they just get hit time after time. And so they had the earthquake, and then now they're recovering from the earthquake, and they've got this terrible hurricane. And it's true that Haiti has really had a lot of challenges in recent years. The earthquake that hit in 2010 was centered mostly up around the Port-au-Prince area.
Okay.
And as you kind of get further down to the southwest, you get into areas that really weren't affected by the earthquake very much. But sadly, as you get down into the southwest, that's the area now that was really hit by Hurricane Matthew. So October 4th, 2016, Hurricane Matthew made landfall. They talk about they think there were probably winds of about 145 miles per hour, 230 kilometers an hour, Category 4 storm, and probably the most powerful hurricane to hit Haiti since Hurricane Cleo in 1964.
Wow.
So as I visit with Haitians, you know, so there are folks around that remember the last time that there was a hurricane that was this powerful, but a lot of young people have never seen anything anything as devastating as Hurricane Matthew. And Community of Christ is really strong out in the areas where Hurricane Matthew hit. So as you go as you visit the South Department of Haiti, and especially when I was there in November, we got to go out and take a look at the damage. And heading out from Lake Kai, you start seeing all the electric poles that are knocked down and trees down, until by the time you get out to where the worst damage of the hurricane is, Chardonnière congregation is one of our kind of flagship congregations in the area. Has been there for many years as a real strong congregation. And it sits in an area where, you know, people would say to me, yeah, there were all these houses that were in this area, and you would never believe that anyone had ever lived in some of these valleys down by the seacoast where the hurricane hit. There's just nothing left, no sign of life, and all the trees have been broken off, and all the you know, just everything has been kind of swept away from some of those places. So pretty amazing. So the Community of Christ, you asked about what Community of Christ provided in assistance. So the Oblation Fund, in just the days after the hurricane, immediately provided $10,000 of assistance. And that money, the first money that went down, was spent mostly on food and clothing and medicine for those who were just trying to survive in those first few days after the storm. And then there was an appeal that was sent out to members and friends of Community of Christ. And from October through to the end of 2016, the church collected money to help out with the disaster. And about $70,000 was given by Community of Christ members and friends. And so that money has now all been sent to Haiti. And the initial aid that went down, like I say, went for kind of immediate survival stuff. Then most of the $70,000 that was given is putting roofs back on structures. So in the days after the disaster, there were several NGOs, so several non-governmental organizations, that came through and provided tarps. In fact, by the time I went down there in November, I was seeing all of these tarps from international aid agencies that were helping to keep the rain off of people. But what our staff identified as a need then to spend the $70,000 on was partnering with people who were trying to get metal roofs put back on their homes and on some of our churches. So the $70,000, a lot of it has already been spent. Some of it is still being distributed. We just had kind of the last disbursement of aid money that went down earlier this month. And so the last truckload of metal will be going around, and people will have helped to get a more permanent roof back on their buildings.
Wow.
So I just need to say, everywhere I go, I'm thanking people, because the people in Haiti are very, very grateful to folks from all around Community of Christ. It's my 10-year-old daughter putting her dollar in the offering plate on a Sunday after Disciples Generous Response stories were shared. You know, that money combined with money from all over the world is just really making a tremendous difference right now to people trying to stay dry in the South and in the Jérémy departments, especially of Haiti.
Well, I appreciate you saying all that. I also really appreciate that you pointed out that the earthquake that hit in 2010 and Hurricane Matthew in 2016 are in different parts of the island. So it's not the same people just getting pounded over and over and over with these horrible natural disasters. So that actually makes me feel, I don't know, better, or it makes me feel something, because I just, yeah. I thought it was like the same group of people that just kept getting hit over and over. So they're in totally different areas on the island.
Right. Yeah. Pretty much no earthquake damage out where Hurricane Matthew hit, and pretty much no hurricane damage where the earthquake hit. In fact, I remember the as we knew that Hurricane Matthew was headed towards Haiti, I was on email and WhatsApp and keeping in touch with our staff there and leaders. And in fact, I had an email from Renaud Hilaire, who lives in Chardonnay, so right in one of the worst hit areas. And I had an email from him in the middle of the night, right before the hurricane hit. And I remember thinking, oh, this is a good sign. You know, hopefully it's not going to be too bad. Well, then I didn't hear anything from Renaud then for several days after that.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
But I was in constant communication with the people over in Port-au-Prince. So, but they were very much like I was. They were kind of cut off from people down in the South, and so we were all worrying together for what was going to happen. And it was pretty amazing those first as the phone calls started coming in. So talking with Renaud for the first time via cell phone. So, and he had climbed up this mountain opposite Chardonnay. So he lives right on the coast with a view right over the ocean. Our church is there, right with a view over the ocean. And he had walked through the destruction in the village and up onto this mountain to where he could get a cell phone signal, and was calling me. I was in North Bay, Ontario. So there was a while in there where I was just alternating phone calls between Renaud in Haiti, or Narcisse Pierre, who is our leader up in Jérémy, another one of the really badly affected areas. I would be getting phone calls from them, and them describing, you know, Renaud is looking out over just the devastation of his neighborhood, all these houses that are destroyed, everybody that is they've lost all their clothing and their homes and everything. And then I'd get a phone call. I remember getting a phone call from Dave Pessa in North Bay, Ontario, and he was telling me about what their congregation was committing in terms of contributing to help the people in Haiti. And for a couple of days there, I was literally alternating phone calls between people who were calling and wanted to let me know about what their congregation in North Bay or in Oklahoma or wherever, what they were doing to help, and then talking to the people in Haiti. And it was pretty wild.
Gosh, I just love hearing that story. I love how interconnected we are. And it's people like you who have traveled all over the church and worked all over the church that help make those connections actually possible. So we get to hear these stories, and we get to know that money that we give to abolish poverty and suffering, or the Oblation Fund, actually makes a real difference in the lives of people. I mean, they're putting roofs on people's heads, which is really awesome to hear that something is being done and people are being helped.
It's, you know, Carla, it's so true. I think when I was, when I was younger, when I was a kid, even when I was even first working for the church, I mean, I knew about Oblation. We had this thing called Oblation. In my mind, it helps some people who were short on money for rent sometimes or need a little bit of help. But it wasn't until I started being involved in administering Oblation funds in some places that I start realizing, and I used to tell Eric when Eric was little, that dollar that you put in to abolish poverty and suffering, that dollar there is a very good chance that that will be the difference between life and death for someone. And I still remember some of those first experiences being involved with administering oblation, where it really was a life and death situation. And it's so cool the way people from all over the whole world can pool our resources together and can make that kind of difference. And it's not just, you know, hooray for us because we wealthy people are giving to help poor people, but it's the way all of our resources come together. So it's not just that there's this fund for ablation, but, you know, when I was in Bolivia and Simon Copa was, you know, he would go down every day and visit with the Cuban doctors who had a little office there in Cochabamba. And he kind of had this idea that maybe someday he could convince those Cuban doctors to come on this church trip with him out to Coipa, to this remote village where we had this congregation, you know, where you'd ride in the back of a flatbed truck that you'd, you know, hire a little spot in on the way to Torotoro, and then up from Torotoro, an 18-hour walk over the mountains and down into the village of Coipa. And that trip, when Simone convinced those Cuban doctors to go with them, and when they get there and they find this woman whose appendix has just ruptured, and weren't for them having been there, she would have died. In that case, it was these local leaders out of their own generosity and coming together with resources from other countries and other systems and all sorts of things, kind of conspiring together to get this woman in Coipa on a makeshift stretcher and carry her up over the mountain and down the mountain and into Torotoro and in, you know, a horrible truck ride back to Cochabamba and get emergency surgery that she needs, paid for by my daughter and my, you know, friends having thrown pennies, dollars, whatever, into this fund that provided just that little bit of extra help so that she could have this surgery that she needed. And yeah, it's a messy world and we can't help everybody and it's complicated and there need to be all sorts of approaches to abolishing poverty. But sometimes it's just that we have this fund that really makes a difference between someone living and someone dying. And it's humbling to have been able to be a part of that now in several different places in several different ways. So
yeah, it really reminds me of the story of Stone Soup, right? Like, we can't make this whole soup on our own, but we can give our parts, and like we can give what we can give, and when you bring it together, the sum of the whole really is greater than the sum of its parts. So I fully believe that there is something pretty special and I would say divine in what happens when we come together and act as a community, helping each other for the good of the community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ooh, Stone Soup sounds delicious. Anyway, you mentioned something about a new building that is being built after the earthquake in Port-au-Prince?
Yes. So in Pétionville, actually. So that would have been our flagship building, I guess, of Community of Christ in Haiti. That was where the Mission Center office was. And we had a big church building and a school. In fact, many of our churches in Haiti, we have a church building, a worship kind of hall, and then a school building. So we partner with the local communities and with Outreach International to support these school programs all around Haiti. So after the earthquake, it's been a long process of rebuilding churches and schools, especially up around the Port-au-Prince area. And the last building, so the last big building project is the big church in Pétionville. We started rebuilding the end of last year, and we hope that the facility will be open for the start of the school year in September of 2017. So it's going to be a challenge to get everything completed so that kids can move into the new classrooms for September. But that's the target. And the new building will be smaller than the building that was there before, but it will be better built than the building that was there before. And that's been kind of the delay in getting this building going. It's been a matter of working properly with professional architect and engineering firms to really make sure that we're building a building that is earthquake resistant. So the building that was there had been built over the years, little by little, as funds became available. The school had been expanded multiple times, and the church had been expanded. That those buildings completely collapsed in the earthquake, and so for a long time, the congregation had been meeting there on that site, but just in kind of a makeshift building. And now that congregation is meeting in a school nearby, and the new building is being built there in Petchenville. So we're really excited about that. It's we're hoping, like I say, to have kids be able to start school in September, and then we're looking at having our Haiti Great South Mission Center conference, the first Mission Center conference for Haiti Great South Mission Center, in that new building, as we dedicate the new building and celebrate that later on this year, and have the Mission Center conference. And then we'll probably also be using that building again to host the anniversary celebration next year, because next year is the 50th anniversary of the founding, the Organization of Community of Christ in Haiti.
Oh, wow. So many things to look forward to.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Oh, and I'm sure the Haitians are excellent at celebration. Lots of good food, lots of good singing, lots of good times.
They are really good at celebration. They are indeed. I guarantee you the singing will be fabulous.
Oh, I have no doubt. I really enjoy listening to the Haitians sing on Community of Christ Sings. I love their songs.
It's so fun, Carla, because we've got a couple of songs recorded. So in the on the flash drive of Community of Christ Sings, we've got two songs from Haiti. And as I travel around to Haitian congregations, oftentimes I've got my little portable speaker. I've got the Community of Christ Sings, all that flash drive content I have on my phone.
Of course.
And so, starting to preach or starting to share with a congregation, I'll hook up that music and we'll sing along. And sharing with people that, on this last trip, I was telling them I'd just been in Madrid, Spain, and was there with our Filipino congregation in Madrid. And we had sung this song along with the Haitians in Madrid, Spain, and in England, and in Canada, and all over the world. People are singing with the Haitian choir, singing this, singing these songs. And it's pretty cool to realize that, wow. People all over the world know our song and are singing with us. And then they join in and we sing it together. And in a way it's like we're all singing together around the whole world as we sing those songs. So it's fun, but you should come to Haiti for the 50th anniversary celebration, Carla.
That would be incredible. And I need to learn French before I go.
Oh, no. You don't need to learn French. You come to Haiti, and then we'll teach you Creole, because that's what you really need to learn.
Do you know Creole, too?
Well, I'm working on learning Creole, so I've kind of just started. In fact, I really just got another book that that someone recommended to me while I was in Haiti this time. So I'm not really even ready to give you a sampling yet, but next time.
So the Haitians mostly speak Creole, but they also speak French. Is that how it works?
Right. So Creole that's really the language of the people. Because of the history of Haiti, there's a strong French influence. It was a French colony at one point. So and just kind of because of the interesting twists and turns of history, for a while the official language in schools and everything was French. But nowadays, really most people speak Creole, and all of our congregations, the language that people would be speaking most of the time is Creole. So, but I can communicate with our staff and with people tend to speak at least a little bit of French. So we can talk to each other.
Oh, wow. Well, now that we're kind of talking a little more about the culture, tell me about the food in Haiti. What's it like, and how is it different than food that us Americans are used to?
Well, so...
not that you're American. Sorry about that.
Well, we're all part of North America, right? So
right.
It's okay.
That's
so
true.
But yeah, so they there are all sorts of wonderful things. They eat lots of plantains and lots of wonderful vegetables. Some people know about me. I'm this Whole Foods plant-based eater. So I can't tell you much about, you know, I haven't had any good Haitian goat in a long time because I don't eat goat. I don't eat anything that had a mother or a face. So or was squeezed out of anything that had a mother or a face. So I just leave those animals alone. But in Haiti, I find all sorts of wonderful plant-based things to eat. They make delicious lentils and beans and rice. And beans and rice, you know, that's, from my perspective, that's kind of divine food. So it has been a struggle because Haiti's got, they grow a lot of bananas, they grow a lot of green vegetables, and one of the places where they grow a lot of that stuff is down in the South Department, and this is an area that was just ravaged by the hurricane. So all of their crops down there were destroyed, so it's been a struggle to get planting again and getting that going again. So food travel for me is always a little bit interesting, Carla, because I'm this very picky eater. When I was first assigned here to Haiti at the last World Conference in 2016, I was thinking, oh, it's probably going to be a challenge traveling to Haiti. They probably have never heard of a vegetarian. And I went to the first meeting with our Haitian staff, and I had not realized before, Faustin, our Mission Center Financial Officer for Haiti South Department, is a vegetarian.
How wonderful!
So they're very used to having these weird vegetarians travel around them, a Community of Christ minister vegetarians. So I stick close to Faustin, and we eat bananas and plantains and potatoes and greens. Oh, I've never met a green leaf that I didn't like to eat, I don't think. And they've got these wonderful kind of spinach and I don't know, all sorts of green things. Everybody calls them spinach. I don't know what they are, but they're delicious.
Oh, well, green plants better watch out when you're around then.
Yeah, no green plant is safe when I'm in the neighborhood.
But... Well, gosh. Well, Art, I have just really appreciated hearing about your travels and hearing about how abolished poverty and suffering really honestly does make a difference. Like, we're not just saying it from the pulpit during Disciples Generous Response and, you know, thinking that it might make a difference. It actually makes a difference. And as a bishop myself, I think it's super important for people in the church to hear about that. Before we sign off, is there anything else that you want to mention that I didn't ask about?
I don't think so, Carla. I'm glad that I had the chance to visit. And if people, you know, if people have drifted off during my rambling, I'm sorry. But I do just want to, again, take the chance to say thank you, thank you, thank you from all the folks in Haiti. The help from Community of Christ members and friends has really been life-saving and made all the difference. And it seems like in the current situation, as Haiti Community of Christ has just been in this new era of exploring some of the beautiful things about Community of Christ identity, learning more about our enduring principles, our mission initiatives, and our basic beliefs, it seems like as we've banded together to help each other during this time, it's even more meaningful than normal because there's just this sense that we're really all in it together in this wonderful community that is Community of Christ. And so I know they would want to say thank you. Thank you from people not just who are like, you know, receiving a handout, but thank you They have reached their hands out to each other to help each other, and they really feel connected with us in powerful ways. And so, it's a different kind of thank you right now, but it's really heartfelt.
Oh, that is awesome to hear. Well, thank you for being on the podcast, and I just really appreciate knowing a lot more. I really honestly don't know anything and didn't know anything about Haiti before this. So now I'm very curious to jump online and check out Haiti, and it shares an island with Dominican Republic, right?
Yes.
And so just to look around there and see about all the places that you talked about.
Cool. Well, enjoy your exploring online.
And yeah,
we really do need to get you to Haiti sometime with this.
Oh gosh, I would love it. I might have to take a lot of sunscreen because I'm a little bit of a pale person, but I'm there.
All right.
Cool. Thank you so much, Art, Arthur, Arturo.
The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.
Oh geez. Okay. Gosh. Well, we'll get through this and get going. My gosh, that's crazy. Yeah.